This is Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. The Massachusetts Board of Elementary and Secondary Education has nominated Jeff Riley as the next state commissioner for K-12 education. Riley served as the receiver superintendent of Lawrence Public Schools for the past 6 years. He spent his entire education career in Massachusetts, which means he beat two out-of-state candidates, Penny Schwinn of the Texas Education Agency and Angelica Infante Green of the New York Ed Department. Joining us now from the Department of Elementary and Secondary Education meeting is Max Larkin, WBUR Edify reporter. Hi there, Max.
Hi, Meghna.
So Jeff Riley received the required supermajority of 8 board members expressing their confidence in him. And it's interesting because many education observers across Massachusetts thought this might be the year the state nominated a woman to the post. So what made Riley instead stand out?
Yeah, I think board members were a little sheepish about the fact that a national search turned up two pretty highly qualified women of color who had run state education departments in part in the past, and they ended up going with the white guy from Massachusetts who didn't have that state education experience. But I think it tells you how strongly they approve of Jeff Riley's job in Lawrence. He sort of did the impossible, taking control of a district and actually making it do better, not just run more cheaply or answer to state directives. I think what's interesting here, Meghna, is that Riley could be considered kind of the candidate for the post question to Massachusetts. That was the charter school vote back in 2016. He was thought of as a supreme pragmatist. He crossed borders. He co-ran schools with the teachers union and with some charter management organizations in Lawrence. Board Chair Paul Sagan, after the vote, he supported Riley, and he cited that track record of kind of boundary crossing. Let's listen.
I think that what he has proven is that he can work collaboratively with all of the constituents who feel deeply involved, especially the adults who often fight with each other and the kids pay the price. And Jeff was able to bring them to the table and get change made and change that helped kids.
You know, it's interesting, Max, because it seems to your point about the post question to Massachusetts, though, was there a tension in this process between sort of what the state needs right now in terms of closing achievement gaps versus sort of a bigger long-term vision about where Massachusetts might go?
I think there was, and I think that ultimately tipped the scales in favor of Riley. Angelica Infante Green got 3 votes of the 11-member board, a lot of people citing how wonderful it would be to have a New York-trained Latina woman running a school that's becoming, that has more and more English learners. But the fact is, as they said, we do have a woeful performance on the state ranking when it comes to those learners, and not 10 years from now, but right now. Riley's been meeting with this board for years, and they clearly felt confident that his learning curve would be less steep. He'd be able to come in here, be innovative, but not be ideological, and come in and help right away. Sagan spoke to me about that as well. Could we hear that?
I think what you heard in various ways was that the supermajority of the board were persuaded that Jeff Riley was the best candidate today for the work now. That somebody who could take the opportunity and the pressing need now, bring together the constituents and scale the work that he's demonstrated. He can do it. At the end of the day, that transcended those other qualifications.
Now, Max, Jeffrey Riley, again, as we mentioned, received support of 8 members of the board, including, I should note, the board members who represent teachers' unions and the board member who represents a business community, not two groups who very often see eye to eye anymore. So what's the significance of that?
I think it's very significant. I mean, in 1993, this was the state where we came up with testing and accountability in the form of the MCAS. We introduced charter schools back then as well. And we thought of that as a grand bargain between a lot of different constituencies in the educational space. Now, 25 years later, that's kind of a mess. You know, there have been awful fights about nearly every one of those big reforms that we put in 1993. And Jeff, Riley, for all of his lack of experience at the state level, is thought of as someone people like on all sides of those divides. And so the hope is he can be a healer. He knows the relevant people, and that he can go to work again right away.
Mm. Now, what about Angelica Infante Green? She did receive 3 votes today, and she was so impressive at those public interviews last week. I remember you telling us on the show that she kind of blew the board away. And as we mentioned, she could have been the first woman of color even, to be the head of K-12 education in this state. What did her supporters say?
Yeah, there was a real kind of sigh as it became clear that Riley was going to make it on sort of the first ballot. Carrie Rodriguez Lorenzo was one of the people I spoke to. She had endorsed Infante Green. She works for a parent organization with largely Latino membership, Massachusetts Parents United. And she had said it would have meant so much to the members of that organization to be able to speak in fluent Spanish with the commissioner to make themselves be heard. They're the fastest growing subset of enrollment in Massachusetts. And so she expressed some real sort of chagrin as the vote came through. We can hear from her as well.
I think it was a missed opportunity for us to really bring to life our ideals around diversity and engaging parents directly and making them partners.
And to be fair, Rodriguez said she's committed to working with Riley, though, you know, the largely Latino residents in Lawrence have had a mixed record with him. Some of them are very proud of him making the tough decisions, but others think he hasn't been sufficiently responsive to their needs. Mm.
Now, I want to play one more piece of tape here from a board member, Margaret McKenna, who supported Angelica Infante Green, because this issue of a highly qualified female candidate from out of state, she basically encouraged the board to not let the fact that Angelica Infante Green was from out of state cloud their opinion of her. Here's what she said.
And there is something to say when before you is a highly qualified woman interested in this job who has all of the qualifications we've laid out, that we should pay attention to that.
Now, I found that interesting because all the board members actually had quite glowing praise for Infante Green. And it seemed like they were saying they were struggling with their decision to go with Jeffrey Riley. But at the end of the day, Max, I mean, you've reported closely on all of the three finalists' careers. Is this a case where perhaps the board went with the local candidate because they know him best? I mean, he has appeared regularly before the board. He's been at Lawrence for 6 years, and his record is as transparent to the board as possible.
Yeah, I think what Margaret McKenna was saying there was don't be so parochial, don't be so Massachusetts, don't go with the guy you know. I mean, take a chance on someone who really did impress all of us on Friday in her interview, and it comes with an incredible pedigree. But I do think that perhaps Massachusetts' nation-first reputation kind of tilted it for Riley again. You know, New York has its problems in schools, and there's a sense that while Riley's been in Boston, he was behind important reforms there, extended learning, breakfast in class. And yes, they know him, but Massachusetts' educational past 20 years has had a lot of good to it, and mm-hmm. Riley's been deeply involved in a lot of that.
Yeah.
So maybe that's it.
So last question, Max. I mean, based on what we heard today and last week, what sense did you get about where the board, what priorities the board has for the coming years?
This search process was all about closing achievement gaps. You know, it's the black eye on the otherwise stellar reputation up here, you know, making sure that English learners, racial minorities, new arrivals, and students with disabilities do well in state schools. So that is their professed priority. Now, there's going to be a lot of other stuff, implementing curriculum, stretching out the state's plan. But the fact that Riley went into Lawrence and turned so many academic metrics in that district around, it's a mostly minority, a lot of Spanish-speaking people in Lawrence, I think that was, you know, he can do it in Lawrence, why can't he do it for the state? That seemed to have been the theory.
Well, Max Larkin, Edify reporter for WBUR. Max, thank you so very much.
Thank you, Magda.
By the way, head over to WBUR.org to read all of Max's terrific reporting on the three finalists for state education commissioner. Let's turn now to another knowledgeable education voice, Massachusetts State Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz. She's the Senate chair of the Joint Committee on Education. She joins us now from the State House to talk about the commissioner pick and about broader issues in education funding as well. Senator Sonia Chang-Diaz, welcome back to the show.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me back.
Hey, so first of all, your thoughts on Jeffrey Riley as the new K-12 commissioner?
You know, I'm excited to work with Jeff. I look forward to it. He has earned a lot of people's respect over the years, both in his work as the receiver in Lawrence and before that as a principal in a highly regarded school. What is now a highly regarded school several years ago was a school that was, you know, had a lot of worrisome metrics as the principal of that school. So, you know, he has achieved growth in a lot of places where folks before him have failed at that. And he has balanced diverging interests in a way that's really tough in the education space. So I'm looking forward to working with him, for sure. I also would have loved to have worked with Infante Green.
I mean, you put out a statement that made it sound like you were a little disappointed.
No, I don't. I'm disappointed, I think, is an emotion that I would reserve for if we were having an incoming commissioner that I was not excited about, right, and I didn't think was equal to the job. And we really were blessed as a state to have two really extraordinary finalists that would bring different strengths to the job. It is not lost on me, and I have to say this, you know, more on a personal level. As chair of the Education Committee, I'm in my now eighth year as chair of the Education Committee, and co-chair it with Alice Peisch, and, been through the experience many times now of presiding over Education Committee hearings at which many wonderful, well-qualified, talented, dedicated men come to testify before us as superintendents, as principals. And it's never lost on me in those moments that there is the leadership layer of the education sector is dominated by men in a field that where the front lines are very heavily dominated by women.
So is that what you meant in your statement where you said her, meaning Angelica Infante Green's candidacy, offered the board an opportunity with a truly excellent applicant to have our education leadership more closely reflect the workforce it relies on and the students it serves? They will need to redouble their efforts in this respect.
Exactly. Both for the workforce and, again, for the students, as you've mentioned before, that our student population in Massachusetts is increasingly students of color. And I think it's really valuable and meaningful for people to see folks in leadership positions who understand the lived experience.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts on that because that's new breaking news we have today. But Senator Chang Diaz, we invited you on to talk money. So should we do that? Should we talk a little education funding here?
Let's do it. Let's dive in.
Because, I mean, this is a big, big issue here, right? Because Massachusetts spends billions of dollars on K-12 education. And in his 2019 budget proposal, Governor Charlie Baker has allotted $4.8 billion for ED. And he actually hinted to this at his State of the Commonwealth address last week. Let's listen to what he said.
We're funding K-12 education at the highest level in history, more than $4.7 billion. And tomorrow's budget submission will boost that number by another $100 million, representing an increase of nearly $500 million since we took office.
Senator Chang Diaz, you put out a statement mere moments after the governor said that, saying, you don't agree. You don't think that the funding is at the highest levels ever. Why not?
Yeah, is probably a pretty accurate sum of my reaction to that. And I want to also put that in context, right? There were many things actually in the governor's State of the Commonwealth speech that I thought were very deserving of credit. But his remarks on education were not one of those categories. And, it was frustrating to me and it was disappointing because I think it really paints a picture for Massachusetts voters, taxpayers, parents that is inaccurate. And, to say that that we as a state currently and that the governor and his budget are funding K-12 education at historic levels is, you could put it on a graph and it's there for everyone to see. They don't have to take my word for it, that when you control for inflation, which is the fair thing to do when you want to talk about the purchasing value of those dollars, that we are absolutely not at historic levels of funding for K-12 education and that we're actually nearly 7%. Percentage points down relative to the high water mark in 2002.
Okay, so
that's why you see districts facing these cuts year after year. It's not a mistake.
Right, because the purchasing power of those dollars has to keep up with inflation. But if it's not due to the funding, they can't, right? So the cuts have to come somewhere. Okay.
Exactly.
Okay, but there's also, so that's just the inflation part of this picture. But there's also a deeper issue, which, I mean, you've been working on for several years now, and that is the basic state formula that state government uses every year to figure out sort of how much to fund Massachusetts schools across the Commonwealth. You say is in need of massive overhaul because it hasn't been updated in some 20 years, and because of that, in that respect, how much do you think that we're underfunding education?
Well, so here again, this is a place where folks don't have to take my word for it. This is a matter on which a bipartisan commission of education experts opined very clearly and unanimously 2 years ago. This is the Foundation Budget Review Commission, FBRC for the government jargon. And the commission did a deep dive on this formula, as you've described, the foundation mm-hmm. formula that drives all of our education funding math in Massachusetts. And the commission was asked to take a look at that formula because it's a quarter century old now. And the legislature wanted to know, you know, what's working, what's not working. Do we need to get under the hood and, you know, update anything for the 21st century? And the commission came back with very clear findings. One was that we are under projecting what it costs to educate kids in Massachusetts by between $1 and $2 billion a year. And that's billion with a B, and that's every year. So, that is a big number. Folks on the front lines at the district level, parents, they know this. They know it intuitively. It's their lived experience. That's why they keep having to, issue cuts year over year over year. And we're now at we're 10 or so years into that process.
Yeah.
And people, they're down to the bone.
Well, so let me just jump in here because so the idea is that costs have changed, right, in terms of special education and healthcare funding, and those are much bigger parts of education budgets than they have been in the past. You're already getting some pushback on this, right? Because we saw a Boston Herald editorial saying that this is the Herald's words, right? that you're whining, and the Herald wrote that someone on Beacon Hill should ask you what you'd like to cut in order to put more money into education. I mean, if you're talking about more than $1 billion here, that seems to be a fair question. What would you cut?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, I would say in response to the characterization of the Herald, and they're entitled to their opinions, but I would ask them if they acknowledge inflation as a legitimate economic concept. Because if they do, then what we're talking about here is far afield from whining. And, and again, this was a bipartisan commission of experts that made these findings. So in response to the question, Meghna, what would you cut? The reality is we're already spending more money year over year. We are increasing our education aid in raw dollars year over year. And so, first of all, we have to ask ourselves, are we rooting that money through a formula, through a spending process that is intentional, that's targeted at the things that where we think it needs to go? So, just to give people an example here to wrap their brains around, if you took the recommendations of the Foundation Budget Review Commission and you phased them in over 7 years, by our most recent economic numbers from a couple years ago, that would mean about $200 million in new money each year. So with the governor's own numbers from his proposed budget, he's proposing to put $119 million in new money into K-12 education mm-hmm. aid. So that's 60% of the way there already.
Right.
And no one expects, even the commission, right, that bipartisan commission, no one expects that you're going to flip a switch and turn the money on, go from zero to all the way there in 1 year. So everyone has always envisioned that it's going to be a multi-year phase in, just like it was in the 90s when we made this commitment in the first place, right? When we passed the Ed Reform Act in 1993, we made a really important, radical, sensible promise that we in Massachusetts are going to deliver quality public education to all children, regardless of their zip code, regardless of their socioeconomic status. And if we mean to keep that promise, we have to update the formula. And it's going to take a few years to get there. But if you don't set a goal line, you will never get there.
Well, Sonia Chang Diaz is a state senator for the Second Suffolk District. She's also the Senate chair of the Joint Committee on Education. Senator Chang Diaz, it's always a pleasure to have you. Thank you so much.
Thank you again, Meghna.
We'll be back. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.